And here's another question. Do you think it's at all surprising if a person who turns to everyday life, after the contemplation of the divine, cuts a sorry figure and makes a complete fool of himself? If before he can see properly or can get acclimatized to the darkness around him, he is compelled to compete in the law courts or anywhere else about the shadows of justice, or the statues which cast those shadows, or to argue about the way they are understood by those who have never seen justice itself. No, it's not in the least surprising, he said. Anyone with any sense, I said, would remember that people's eyesight can be impaired in two quite different ways, and for two quite different reasons. There's the change from light to darkness, and the change from darkness to light. He might then take it that the same is true of the soul, so that when he saw a soul in difficulties, unable to see, he would not laugh mindlessly, but would ask whether it had come from some brighter life and could not cope with the unfamiliar darkness, or whether it had come from greater ignorance into what was brighter and was now dazzled by the glare. One he would congratulate on what it had seen and on its way of life, the other he would pity, or if he chose to laugh at it, his laughter would be less absurd than laughter directed at the soul which had come from the light above. Yes, what you say is entirely reasonable. Well, I said, if it's true, there's one conclusion we can't avoid. Education is not what some people proclaim it to be. What they say, roughly speaking, is that they are able to put knowledge into souls where none was before, like putting sight into eyes which were blind. Yes, that is what they say. Whereas our present account indicates that this capacity in every soul, this instrument by means of which each person learns, is like an eye which can only be turned away from the darkness and towards the light by turning the whole body. The entire soul has to turn with it, away from what is coming to be, until it is able to bear the sight of what is, and in particular, the brightest part of it. This is the part we call the good, isn't it? Yes. It is up to us, then, as founders of the city, to compel the best natures to get as far as that study which we said earlier was the most important, to make that ascent and view the good. And when they have made it, and seen all they need to see, we must not allow them to do what they are allowed to do at the moment. What is that? Remain there, I said, and refuse to come back down again to the prisoners we were talking about, or share in their hardships and rewards, be they trivial or substantial. That seems very unfair. Are we going to make them live a worse life when it is in their power to live a better one? Now it's your turn to have forgotten, my friend, that the law does not exist for the exclusive benefit of one class in the city. Its aim is to engineer the benefit of the city as a whole, using persuasion and compulsion to bring the citizens into harmony and making each class share with the other classes the contribution it is able to bring to the community. The law is what puts people like this in the city, and it does so not with the intention of allowing each of them to go his own way, but so that it can make use of them for its own purposes, to bind the city together. True, he said, I had forgotten that.